About 200 years ago, the movement out of which this church came, the Christian Church Disciples of Christ, the founders of that were really, they were tired of the division between Christians, the conflict between Christians, and so they decided that instead of making people sign off on these long doctrinal statements, they had these long, what they call creeds or creedal statements that people would have to sign off on with you know, basically beliefs about baptism and communion and theological issues and political issues, pretty much anything you can imagine. You had to sign off on those before you could become a member of the church. And they said, we're not going to do that anymore. We're going to ask one question. And that question is the one that you've heard probably here before, if you've ever seen somebody come forward. Do you believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and do you accept him as your personal Lord and Savior? That is what we call the good confession. And that's the only thing that is required to become a disciple. The only thing that's required to become a member of the Christian church. It's all about Jesus. That is who we are as disciples of Christ. We are followers of Jesus. We sit at his feet and listen. We follow where he leads. It is to him that I committed my life. It is to him that I've committed my life in ministry as well. So you can understand why a couple of years ago I was really excited when I was invited by a young adult conference back in Ohio that I've been involved with for a number of years. I was invited to do a keynote address, and I've done quite a few of these. This is one year I was there, and normally they invite me to speak on a specific theme or a subject that they're going to be covering that week, and it could be almost anything. But this one particular year, they said, we want you to talk about Jesus. That was amazing. I was like, wow, what a, you know, I have a lot to say on this subject, and there's nothing more important to me. And so I set about working on it, and I had months, actually, to be thinking about this, and so I kind of started putting things together. And where I kind of headed with it was, you know, because I know some of these young adults are, this is 19 through 29-year-olds, and some of them are kind of not sure where they're headed with their life, and my thought was, they need to have Jesus at the center of their life. They need Jesus to be an authority in their life. And so that was kind of the direction that I was going with it. And so I worked on it. I worked hard on it. The week of Advanced Conference came, and I went. And my son, my oldest son, was, I think, 24 at the time. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to let him take a look at this before I do it. So about 2 days before my keynote address, I let him read it, and I remember watching him, and his brow was kind of furrowed, and he looked up at me after he'd read it, and he said, I don't know, Dad. And I was a little perturbed. I don't know how else to say it. I mean, I know my son is opinionated, but I think what perturbed me more than anything was that I had that same kind of feeling deep down about what I'd put together. And it wasn't that anything I had said in this talk was bad or was wrong. It was just that it was a little bit off key. That's the best way I can describe it. It was kind of off key. And so I literally set about rewriting the whole thing. And so I had like 24 hours to completely redo everything that I had prepared. For months I'd been thinking about this. And so what I wound up talking about, instead of why Jesus should be the center of your life and why Jesus should be an authority in your life, became a much humbler why I love Jesus. That was the gist behind my talk. And so for about 45 minutes the next day, I talked about all the reasons I love Jesus, why I love Jesus. And a miracle happened. I mean, something I would have hoped and prayed would have happened, probably wouldn't have happened if I'd given the original talk, but what happened was people began to come to me that day, and they began to tell me all the reasons they love Jesus. And that night, the Vespers Committee, the group that plans the worship in the evening, they put paper up on the walls in the chapel where we were meeting, and then they had people write on the paper all the reasons they love Jesus. And I mean, we had that up all week. People could see all of the reasons that people loved Jesus. So it went from being this kind of authoritarian, you should do this, you should put Jesus at the center of your life to more of a kind of an invitational, come and see for yourself. This is what I've experienced in my life. This is what Jesus means to me. Maybe this is what Jesus can mean for you too. And so today we're going to be looking at a text where Jesus says to his disciples, who do you say that I am? And that's a question that he asks of us as well. Who is he to you? What is your experience of him? How do you love him? What difference has it made in your life? And so we're going to be reading, this text is found in all of the Gospels, but we're going to be reading Matthew's version of it today, which is found in Matthew 16, beginning at verse 13. Now when Jesus came to the district of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, who do people say the Son of Man is? And they said, some say John the Baptist, but others Elijah, and still others Jeremiah, or one of the prophets. Jesus said to them, but who do you say that I am? Simon Peter answered, you are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. And there's that good confession. That's where it comes from, right there. You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God, he says. And Jesus answered him, blessed are you, Simon Bar-Jonah, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father in heaven. And I tell you, you are Peter, Petra. And on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not prevail against it. I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven, and whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. Then he sternly ordered the disciples not to tell anyone that he was the Messiah. Now, I don't know about you, but I've always been a little stumped by that last verse. Jesus is saying, don't say anything. It seems like almost like the opposite of evangelism, doesn't it? It'd be like us having this really nice worship service where people are really touched and their hearts are moved, and then me saying, before you leave, okay, by the way, before you leave, don't say anything to anyone about Jesus when you leave. And for heaven's sakes, don't invite anybody to church. It's kind of hard to understand why Jesus would say that until you understand the context a little better, until you understand what was going on with Jesus' disciples, why he would say this. So at the time, Peter and the rest of the disciples, and pretty much all Jews, when they heard that word, Messiah, what they imagined was something along the lines of a warrior in the image of King David. That's what they imagined. Somebody that would unite Israel and that would destroy Israel's enemies. That was what they imagined when they heard the Messiah. So Peter had the right word, he had the right title, but he had the wrong definition. So they weren't thinking the suffering servant from Isaiah, who takes away the sins of the world, by whose stripes we are healed, who was wounded for our transgressions. They're not thinking of that. They're thinking more along the lines of an avenging kind of warrior. And so it's no wonder then, in the very next section, when Jesus explains to them what it will look like for him to be the Messiah. So in the very next section, Jesus says, okay, let me explain to you now what this means. It means that I must go to Jerusalem, be arrested, be crucified and die, and on the third day rise again. And you may remember Peter said, oh, no, we're not going to let that happen. That ain't going to happen. And so Jesus has just told him what it means for him to be the Messiah. Peter says, uh-uh. And you can understand Peter's confusion. It'd be like a football coach coming out at the beginning, right before a game, maybe the first game of the season, and saying, listen, here's we're going to win this game. We're going to win the whole season, in fact, but you got to trust me. Every time the other team gets the ball, we got to let them score a touchdown. Probably not the best. It doesn't sound like the best way to win a game, but that's essentially what Jesus was saying. We've got to lose if we're going to win. You got to let this happen. And of course, Peter wasn't too excited about that idea. When Jesus said to the disciples, "Who do you say that I am?" I think Jesus was checking at this point to see if they really understood what he was about. They were checking to see if they really understood what it meant for him to be the Messiah, what it was going to mean to him and what it was ultimately was going to mean to them as well. So therefore, when Jesus asks them this question, I think the first answer is the answer that Peter gave. You're the Messiah. That's the first part of the answer. The second part of the answer is it has everything to do with how we allow Jesus to change us from the inside out, so that our lives begin to reflect his life, so that we begin to look more and more like him, so that we follow him as we're supposed to, up to and even including the cross that he carried. Because in that same section where he says, this is what I must do, he says, if you want to be my disciples, you have to do it too. It's right there. This is what it means to be a disciple. This is what it means to be the Messiah. This is what it means to be a disciple of the Messiah. It's all right there. Now, of course, answering Jesus' question, who do you say that I am, looks different for every one of us. It always begins the same way. It always begins with the good confession. I believe that you are the Messiah. It always begins with a willingness to follow where he leads. But what that looks like in terms of the way we live out our lives is unique. It's as endlessly variable as we are as people. I want to tell a story today about a gentleman. It's one of my favorite discipleship stories that I did a memorial service for a number of years ago. And I was asked to go and visit him. He was in hospice care, dying of terminal cancer. My choir director was friends with him and asked that I go see him. He was asking for a pastor to come and talk to him and to pray with him. And he had, his name was Tony, and he had kind of an interesting reputation. He was a defense attorney in the Dayton area who was well known for defending some of the less reputable characters in the area. And he was kind of known as maybe a friend to some of these folks. And so he didn't have the best reputation. A lot of people didn't like him, and they kind of looked down at him. They talked about him. And on top of that, he had kind of a crusty exterior, kind of a hard exterior. If I hadn't known that he really wanted to talk to me, I wouldn't have been so sure when I first met him. But the more I got to know him as I visited with him, as we talked about Jesus, as we talked about his faith, he'd grown up in the Catholic Church, but he'd kind of fallen away from that. But he remained a person of deep faith. And we prayed together and we talked together. And that was important to him, and it became kind of important to me too. After he passed away, we had a memorial service for him at a country club bar where he belonged, because he didn't belong to a church at that point. And the place was packed with people, and it was like a Saturday morning or around lunchtime, I think, and everybody was getting drinks at the bar and lots of laughter and conversation. And finally, I realized nobody was going to take charge of this. I was the only one, and so I made everybody sit down because we had something we needed to do. And I think a lot of people were just curious as to what I was going to say about this guy. And so what I said, this I think may be one of the most inspired introductions to a memorial service I've ever written. So this is, I'm going to give you the exact words that I said that day. Once upon a time, there was a man who was well known for the unsavory people with whom he associated. In fact, the good people of the community were often critical of him because of this. They talked about him behind his back. Sometimes they openly condemned his activities. Of course, the people he helped loved him. They saw in him something others didn't. Though reviled, he continued to serve those that no one else would. He was courageous and compassionate and caring. And at this point, people were beginning to kind of nod their heads, like, that sounds like Tony. That's right. So I kept going. Just a while ago, the people who loved him gathered a few days after the anniversary of his death, except they didn't gather in grief, but in celebration, because the one who had died such a cruel and early death was no longer in the tomb which had been donated to him. Indeed, when the women who loved him gathered early on a Sunday morning to prepare his body, they quickly discovered he was no longer there. At that point, they started to realize where I was actually going. And then I said, of course, the man of which I speak is none other than, and the one to whom I come to you today is none other than Jesus of Nazareth, the one who Tony loved and served in his own unique way. And then I went on and I talked about Tony, the man who was really disliked by mostly by other attorneys in town, probably because he was really good at his job, but who I found out was beloved by courthouse secretaries and bailiffs and clerks and custodians and deputy sheriffs and of course all of the felons and other folks that loved him, absolutely loved him. And even though he might have been estranged from the Catholic Church of his childhood, I believe that he never gave up answering that question that Jesus asked of him, "Who do you say that I am?" Those who follow Jesus, like Tony, we have something in common. At some point or another, we've all answered the question, "Who do you say that I am?" by saying, "I believe that you're the Messiah, the Son of God." So we all have that good confession in common. But after that, we're each as unique as could possibly be. Some follow pretty unconventional routes, like Tony, in terms of what their service, what their discipleship looks like, how they mirror Jesus in their own life. He certainly mirrored Jesus in his life in a very unique way. Some of you might follow more conventional patterns, like me. But again, the question remains for each of us. Who do you say Jesus is? Not just with your words, but with your life. Let's pray. Lord, you've given us an example in Jesus Christ of what a faithful life looks like. We know that we're not all cookie cutters. We're not all made to be exactly the same. That's not how you created us. That's not what you want. You want us to be faithful. You want us to ask that question, to answer that question of Jesus on our own, in terms of the gifts that you've given us, the experiences that we have, that we might live faithfully into that, that we might be the disciples that you have created us and called us to be. For we ask these things all in his name. Amen.